Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Ben Kissel here, hanging out with Henry Zabrowski.
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, we're absolutely nothing. Today, we're honored to have with us a fantastic author. She has authored a book, Nothing But Blackened Teeth, which was an award-winning book, and she has a new book out.
Many awards.
Many awards. She has a new book out called The Salt Grows Heavy. Cassandra Cao is with us. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi there. I'm so happy to be here.
This is so cool. Thank you for being here. I love the concept of old school mermaids, right? And the idea of the back in the day that they were super mean. Do you ever see? Oh, yeah.
I thought they were always sexy. They weren't always sexy.
We'll get into it. Cabin in the Woods. You remember Cabin in the Woods? You ever see that movie?
Yeah.
Like when he's begging for the mer people. Like when are the mer people come up? I was also begging. Where did it start? When you want to write a book about something like this, like, does it start as because it's basically a dark, like, fantasy drama about hardcore mermaids.
Sweet.
Right? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Hardcore ass, straight up deadly ass mermaids.
Sweet.
How do you get to this point with mermaids? Because I was a little mermaid boy, but it's different.
Yes. Why the love of the mermaid?
Oh. Well, it's a bunch of things. To be fair, the origins of the novella itself actually is a little bit comical. There was a comic panel on 9gag, if you remember the website.
Yes.
That depicted the little mermaid Ariel having eggs instead of actual children.
Cool.
And it was censored out. And I remember just looking at the panel and just Eric staring at the censored mess. And I'm like, I gotta think this is its logical conclusion here at this point.
Right.
Yes, because they fish. That's the idea in my mind. Oh, yeah, yeah. Mermaids are fish.
Are they more fish than people?
To me, they are. Partially because if you look at the old mythologies about mermaids, so much of it's predicated on sailors going, what the hell is that going under the water? And going, with luck, that is a mermaid. And so I've always pictured mermaids as aquatic creatures who have kind of figured it out. If they think like human-esque forms, they might be able to get a interesting meal off the ships.
Oh yeah, I bet enough, because you know we sexualize these mermaids.
I guess so, but now I suppose we can also eat the mermaid.
Or the other way around.
Would you eat mermaid?
I would not eat a mermaid, partially because I feel like bad things would happen as a result.
I agree, and I think they could be pretty gamey. I feel like the mermaid would be a little too gamey.
I think so.
It's a little too close to human flesh. But that's so exciting. So you're bringing mermaid lore to the a new 2023 time, because really the only thing that I know is the Little Mermaid. And let's be honest, she's up there lying. She's not representative of all mermaids
whatsoever. A liar.
She's just trying to get laid by this rich dude. It's not right. What do you want to set straight about the mermaid tale? What do you want everyone to know in 2023 about the mermaid that we're not knowing?
Well, definitely that nothing that's dragged out of the ocean is something that's doing it willingly. And all of those folklores and fairy tales, I think it's just that nice layer of Disney washing, if you will.
Yeah, sure.
Because no one likes to think about it. And if you look at like, mythology is about steel wives and crane wives. It's all about some dude just sneaking up to like someone gently bathing and just minding her own business and taking her skin away.
Right.
Yeah. It's all like stealing. I never really thought about it like that. That it really is about like anything we take from the ocean doesn't want to be taken out of the ocean. And so mermaids are exactly it. But they are like in your world, like how does it work? Then, like in your fictional world with mermaids, is they because you're in their area, right? Like you're amongst mermaids in the book. Like, how do they perceive us? And like, what is their like government like? What's their life like?
There is no government per se. I would see them kind of like a plague of hungry creatures.
Cool.
Functionally immortal, because if they die, they just wait until a sister has a pregnancy and reincarnate into the eggs there.
That's cool. Interesting. I didn't know that.
No, I think this is your world.
This is apparently my world.
This is incredible.
Awesome. I like that.
Let me then sidebar. When you write something like this, what comes first? Like, is it the plot?
Are you going to ask the mermaid or the egg? Whoa! What came first, the mermaid or the egg, folks?
It's the egg.
Hard question.
We all know it's the egg.
The science did prove the egg was indeed
first.
I know.
But when you write something like this, you come up with a plot. When do you start building out a world? Like, when do you start building out a fantasy world?
Oh, the world building, I think, comes really early, partially because for my day job, I work in video games.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that.
You can have a plot, you can have a story, but if it doesn't make sense, like the design, the programming, then you have the art and the music, it's just a bunch of ideas. So I think from all the years working in games, I built the world at the same time I'm thinking of the story.
Okay. That is so fascinating because I saw that, yeah, you wrote a lot of video games, and video games now, these stories are emotional.
Oh, they are.
I tried to play Last of Us 2 during the pandemic, and I was like, I cannot be a 17-year-old lesbian right now. I can't. I literally couldn't handle it. I was like, the stress, the pressure. Video games are just so unbelievably powerful now with the stories and the imagery. How did that background come into play when it comes to something like a book, obviously, where there's no controller, you don't really see it in a visual sense. It's in the theater of the mind.
It is.
Because it's a book. How did that work for you to paint a picture in the mind of the audience? Did the video game background help?
The video game background, that's an interesting question. People usually phrase that one slightly differently and have a different answer for that. But in your case, it is what I said earlier. It may, the video game background makes me think of grounding things. Like, what is this world like? What is their environment? How are the interplay between the characters? How do the different communities connect to one another? What is the implication of it?
Interesting.
And so even with, in a... Yeah,
oh, yeah, because it has to be practical. Like, it has to work.
Yeah.
What I like to describe it as is like when you're watching a movie, when you're reading a book, listening to a podcast, it's almost a guided tour. You have the creative standing at one end going like, all right, I'm just going to walk you through this to the end of it.
Yeah.
Video games, on the other hand, are kind of almost like an amusement park.
Yeah.
With the illusion of free choice, the creator's like, you can go anywhere here and do whatever you want, but actually we need to keep going.
Yeah, right.
Because
I'm currently playing Skyrim for the first time. I've never done this. And man, you could just like walk into a field for like an hour.
You can live a whole life in some of these games.
You could just do nothing. Like I like fell asleep playing the game. You know what I mean? I'm just living a boring ass life in this medieval world for some reason because I can. But then that must frustrate you as a creator, as a video game creator, that I just sit by a fire.
Honestly, that delights me a lot. With open world games, it's always incredibly interesting to see what people do there. I think with Red Dead Redemption, I know there was a lot of amusement because the first thing everyone did was draw dicks into the snow because your particle engine was so good. And that was all
so
the internet.
Good. Yep. And even though they're old Western tough boys, they still need to have fun every now and again.
They really do.
They really do. So that's so interesting. So in your story, mermaids are joined by a mysterious doctor. The mermaids are on the run. It looks like there's a whole bunch of things going on. But then you mentioned grounding. And I think that's such an important message for
creators. And
authors, yeah, because obviously this is a fantastical story, but then it has to be grounded in some kind of soul and reality. How do you find that?
Yeah, how do you ground a sea-based character?
Right. Yeah, how do you do that?
Again, it's about thinking of the world, the shape of it, how it looks like. And so I've thought several classes on this, and I'm just going to move slightly sideways, laterally in the experiment.
Just share with us anything that you want to.
When I create a world, one of the first things I think about is what is the primary source of sustenance? What do people eat? What do people do? Because if you look at the real world as well, we kind of build our cultures around it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So if grain is what we do and what we prioritize, like rice, you suddenly get like rain gods and stuff like, and focus on the cycles and the monsoons and the thunderstorms.
Mm-hmm.
If you look further north, if you look at Nordic culture and stuff, with the Vikings and all of that, you have a slightly more warlike pattern to the Pantheons, a more focus on like surviving the cold and the ice and stuff. So once you have all of those figured out, like the basis of it, you kind of build off that, like, okay, if let's say this is a winter world, what do they do? What do they eat? How do they collaborate with each other? Where does trade happen?
That's such a brilliant way to begin building a narrative this that I didn't even think about.
That is a legitimate lesson for people here, because then
how the fuck do you eat?
But then things come
great
out of that,
first
right?
Question. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
then you find out from your characters what happens in that world.
Yeah, once you have those frameworks in, you put the characters, it's like you said, the characters kind of move around. You're like, okay, if the world is structured like this, it'll make sense if the characters function in a different way or in that way, and so on.
Then you can really get in the head of the characters. Like, do you really feel that way? Like, when you make up, like, what's the difference between a video game character when you create one and an author's character? Like when you do it in a book, like, that's more free form for the reader and for yourself, maybe. Like, how do you do that same reflection of environment on motive in video games versus a novel? Like, how do you make people do things the way a character's supposed to do them?
Well, so one of my former bosses, he described it beautifully in terms of like creating characters and like narratives that work for video games. And he said, what he said was, every video game, you are making a game for three different classes of players. The first class of player is the shooty pew pew speedrunner kind of folks. They want to race through the game. They want to see how fast they can beat it. They want the biggest numbers. They want the most damage. But at the same time, anyone who's speed running to the game, they are still intelligent, coherent, like sapient folks who know what they're doing, what they want. If the logic doesn't work, if the broad strokes of the game make no sense, you're still going to notice even if you finish the game in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
The second class of players are the ones who are, they're interested in the story, but they're not going to do every single optional quest. They're not going to look at all of the books. They're not going to dig to the library in Skyrim and stuff like that. They want a meaty story. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to necessarily have to look for the fine details. And of course, the third class of players are the ones who are on Reddit arguing about what a single badge on this one soldier means.
I'm so sorry that you have to deal with this level, because I can't even believe.
I mean, they get really intense. But to Henry's question a little bit, too, when it comes to like the emotional character. So in Red Dead, for example, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say towards the end, a massive change occurs. I mean, it's a fucking prequel, so people can figure out what happens.
Sure, I don't know what happens.
You don't know what happens?
I've never played Red Dead.
Turns out he's gay.
Whoa, no. Honestly, it's incredible.
We never know. Who knows what happens at the camp? But I was devastated by what happened towards, like, I was like emotional and I was like, no, God. So that was really powerful for me. I actually had a moving moment and I was kind of pissed off and I took to the internet.
You did.
So how do you do that when the person doesn't have the controls in their hands and you're creating a story about a mermaid? How do you make the person have that same connection with your character?
You check the beats, you check the little moments and the stories that you tell in between, the motives, even the choice of language, your descriptiveness, all of that eventually adds up into that moment for you.
That's so
like there are lots of little tricks. It's a weird little science, really.
How'd you get into all?
Those little barbs that keep you like hooked in to be like emotionally invested once again, because you know the human brain, like we're kind of reading, then you get a little bit bored, and then it's like something has to happen. You're like, oh God, I love this mermaid once again.
Yeah, that's why it's nice to get a $5 Arby's coupon in a book. And then I go, thank you. Incredible.
So you're suggesting to get American kids reading more coupons to Arby's.
Every
five pages, you get a free Arby's coupon.
Yep. And then
keep them fat, but keep them reading.
Hey, because that's what keeps them reading, because they won't be able to move. How did you get into all of this? Like, these are the coolest jobs. Even you just saying, well, my day job was writing video games. That's fucking incredible.
I mean, it's definitely going to be good on dates, because every single guy, and everyone's like, and unless, of course, they have opinions on video games, which probably makes your eyes bleed.
Oh, got it. Most of them do.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, they can just shut up.
Yeah, but how'd you get into this? How did you get into writing video games? And into author? Did it come from that, or was it all at the same time? Were you just always a writer?
It kind of came for that. My background is actually in programming. I used to work in AI, and then a series of circumstances kind of took me into doing tech and video games journalism. And from there, it kind of wobbled off into game writing and like book writing.
Cool.
Wow. That's fucking crazy. Working for AI, I wonder if that also informs creating characters and creating worlds.
A little bit. My specialization years and years ago was in neural networks. So I've always been interested in logic systems and how to create really believable characters. Like, so yeah, you're right.
That's really interesting.
I never really thought about
it. When you build neural links like that.
Neural networks.
Neural networks.
You wouldn't know.
How you?
You wouldn't know what she's talking about.
How you do that?
You're going to ask her how she knows. No, this is not the date.
How
this
you
is,
do
no,
that?
This is why, no, this is why all of us are single. People like you. How I'm you
married.
Do that?
I'm married.
No,
you're
I know
single.
This is why Cassandra and I'm going to say she's single.
How you do that?
How you do that?
Computers.
Oh, God.
What happens with them?
I will, okay, because that's an impossible question to answer unless you can.
Yes, you can, right?
The 30-second version is you figure out the rule system and you figure out how you want a neural network to learn from that rule system and how it stores the information and how it kind of interconnects it. And then you build little functions into it to make it smoother and smoother and then try to get a system where it just iterates onto itself until the information makes more sense. And then
well, that sounds easy. It's a, well, that's it. All right. Well, cool.
Let's
great.
Just move on to the unlimited breadsticks here. But that is interesting with AI. Obviously, there's been a lot of conversation about ChatGPT and all this stuff, creating stories and creating, films and scripts and all this stuff. But one of the things that it'll never do is it doesn't have the human element.
No.
And it never will. So as far as like writing and making sure writers and stand-ups and artists in general continue to thrive in the artistic space, does that make you make it, does that I guess force you to make these things more human and really personal? So mm-hmm. when you're writing your books, how do you get that emotion across to people and humanize even something, again, like Mermaids on the Run?
See, he is single. He's asking how to feel emotions. And if you could help him,
that is a good thing.
How you do that? How you make him feel emotions?
I do believe that human beings in general, we are very aware that there are certain forms of story that exist. It's almost embedded in our bones. All of those ancient stories, man versus nature, man versus themselves, man versus time and what have you. We know it all instinctively, and stories are built on the bones of that. And that's if you really, know how to follow it and how to shape it, you can create those big emotional beats. I've never really thought about how to do it practically. It's just something that's come from reading far too many books every year.
How many books do you read a year?
100, 120.
No fucking.
Well, that'd be more than Marcus.
How do you do that?
I'm a speed reader. No one actually taught me how to read, so no one actually told me how to read slowly.
Yeah, that's the thing. You do it like, I remember back in the day. Do you remember the speed reading classes? Did you ever take one of those?
When
you
like scam,
follow your the line. Is that what you do? Where you follow your finger down the page?
No. So English is actually like my third language.
What?
So I
she's smart, Henry.
Picked it up off like Sesame Street and stuff like that. So a little bit of words. Nice. I picked up a book. I was like, huh. And my brain just got used to processing entire paragraphs at a time.
Wow. You're very smart.
Well, she's smart. May 2nd is the book.
I mean, it's going to be crazy. I can't wait to read this book.
Yes. And so let's talk a little bit about Nothing But Black and Teeth. This was one of the books that really kind of broke a USA Today bestseller. Was that the first book that you really felt success with and like you really nailed it?
That's an interesting one. Commercially and critically, yes, but it had so many, it was a very polarizing book. People either really hated it or they really loved it.
Good. That's how you know you're right on the money.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, I guess that's the measure of success. If people are passionate enough to argue about it from both angles.
Do you ever see someone write something about your book that is so egregiously wrong? About their interpretation or how you came up with, like, you ever see write something and you just go like, you know nothing. You know nothing about my process.
Oh, I genuinely believe that like once something goes out, it's no longer yours. It belongs to the individual reader. And so if that is their interpretation, that is still their interpretation because it's based on all their personal background, history, and understanding of the world. Although once or twice I've gotten very, very concerning emails and those I've been like, okay.
What are you gonna- Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
We just put the little red flag on there. We just forward them right to, like, the lawyers. Just
yeah, we forward, send you them just right to the lawyers.
Any manager that you... You bombard them with all that
but
stuff.
Do you feel like now that you are on the other side of the fence, right, you're creator, lord creatress over all your objects, everybody, you know what's going on here. Do you ever find yourself approaching people dressed as, let's say, Little Mermaid in the street, like, you know, like street performers or at Disney and something like that, and go like, you know nothing.
You're doing it
you're
all wrong.
You're doing this wrong. Mermaids right. aren't like
that. Where's
like
your eggs? Where are your eggs?
Do you ever just get lit up and yell yeah. at a bunch of Disney actors?
I never saw a goddamn egg at any of these events.
No. I have not felt the urge to shout at Disney people. They seem very bad.
Well, they're working hard for a living. So nothing but blackened teeth. This is evidently, creepy ass book.
I can't wait.
And it's all about Japanese folklore.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
Japanese folklore is just we're obviously huge horror nerds, and Japanese horror and Japanese folklore is like the best.
It's got so many like characters and demons. It's
scary.
It's like, is that how you find it? Like, how did you get into all that?
Yeah, as far as like, and what's some of your favorite Japanese folklore stories you'd like to share? Or, you know, just let our audience go in a direction so we can find some more.
Oh gosh. I'm actually going to like take a segue from your question and say I want to talk about Southeast Asian horror, which
airtime.
More people need to know about the Toyo. Those are probably my favorite monstrosity in the world.
It's called
T-O-Y-O-L. A Toyo is essentially a stillborn fetus that has been enchanted with black magic and bound to an owner and will go off and steal stuff for the owner in exchange for like feeding of blood.
Whoa.
And the Toyo can be passed down across generations. And what's really creepy is there are a lot of people who do still believe in that in a very practical and functional way. I once went to a friend's house and I saw this little altar with like, you know, kid toys and a bottle baby in there. And I was like, oh,
okay, that's who. See, who is that? What did they say?
Oh, Southeast Asia is very comfortable with the supernatural. Like we have the Hungry Ghost Festival every August.
Oh God, we gotta go to that.
I would love to. Do you?
May I share one more story about that?
Please.
Yes.
So there's something called the Gatai. You will see every year during the Hungry Ghost Festival in Malaysia, and it's essentially massive stages that are erected in every neighborhood. They put out chairs and stuff. The first row are all red chairs. And performers come out and they do a little variety show and stuff like that. And it's fun. People sit down, they'll chill, they'll watch. No one sits on that first row, of course. But then it gets scary because these performances will continue until like 4 or 5 in the morning. And you will see performers addressing nothing, just talking as if they have an audience. And the Gatai are actually there for the hungry dead who are allowed to come back to the earth for 1 month at a time. And that first row is meant to be reserved for the ghosts in case they want to do an early show. But yeah,
that's
tonight
so fucking cool.
The shows get older and older in tone and stuff. It's very neat. If you enjoy horror, Southeast Asia is a good place to go to.
I never really delved into Southeast horror before.
No, this is that fascinating.
And what's that sort of predicated upon? Is it, obvious, like, is it, you mentioned ghosts and things like that, supernatural afterlife. Is there a strong sense of, like, reincarnation and, you know, that sort of spiritual realm in Malaysian culture?
It depends on the person's specific ethnic background, because Malaysia was, Insel is a multicultural place. It was a trade center. So you have, like, 6-7 major ethnicities living side by side, everyone with their own tradition. So some will believe in reincarnation, others won't. And then you also have the local animism, black magic and stuff. And because of how the country and the area is constructed, all of it has sort of fed into one another.
Right. So that's cool.
That is cool. What would you find is like the major difference between a place like Malaysia that is so connected to its spirituality / kind of like, I think paranormal is kind of a childish way to put it, but it's way more like a whole other realm, a whole other side, like, and a place like here that is largely not spiritual, like, you know, for the most part. Like, what would you say is like the major difference?
I think back home, there were as many people who did not believe in the supernatural and as God as there were people who did.
Yeah.
And regardless of where your faith systems were, everyone just kind of like, you know what? We'll all figure it out. Either you're right and we're all dead at the end of it, or we're right. And if you did the good thing, you get to go to the good place.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to be one of these ghosts that gets the front row seat at this festival.
Right?
Sounds freaking awesome. If you just see some rotating corn and nothing else around, that's me eating my corn, watching my performance.
You know for a fact there's some of these hungry ghosts that come back and they're still checking their goddamn phone in the front row. you ghost can see phone. And they're not paying attention.
Come on, ghost Tinder. I hope to match with a couple of people.
You should look up the stories of ghost brides and how there have been corpses stolen to be married off.
We've covered a couple of these. We've covered these because it's very interesting. And over here, it's viewed as like, you know, hyper crazy. But it sounds like it's like a fairly regular occurrence over there. I mean, it's still probably weird.
You should not steal people's corpses without their consent.
That's a really good note.
I think that's so brave, Cassandra. And that's why you're here today.
That's why.
It's Leave Corpses Alone Awareness Month. It's very important that we leave these corpses alone. Although, you know what? If you want to dig up and have a 6'7" bone man in your house, you can have me.
Do you want his body?
There you go.
He's allowing you to have his dead body if you want it.
I'm throwing that out to anyone who wants to dig it up. If you can carry it, you can have it.
I'm sure somebody was like, oh, I will be able to do such tests and such experiments somewhere there. Be careful.
I think they have already done them on me.
So can I ask, if you're going to be one of these things, would you be a mermaid? Would you be a fairy? Or would you be a werewolf?
Oh, werewolf, my God.
Definitely. Come on.
Oh, wow. Wow. Quick answer.
She's here.
Going werewolf. Wow. I was going to, not mer. I love the water, but not that much. And also, you can't have TV because you're in the water. So electricity is banned.
Wait a second. In your world, do mermaids have TV?
No, I'm afraid not. Not yet. We haven't adopted that part of technology yet.
And most you can have musical theater, but then it's just a bunch of bubbles. But I was thinking fairy is kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. I think a fairy would be kind of fun because they're also malevolent in nature.
But then the werewolf, you get to be mostly person until it's a full moon, right? And then you get to freak out. So I think you also make a solid point. All right.
Also, life as a fairy seems terrible. So many posh people and posh rules and endless balls. I am an introvert. I don't want to go to so many parties.
It's always dancing. It's like, always.
No one's really happy.
No, it's a pain in the butt. And then also, you're giving me a werewolf. You could finally unleash that bloodlust that you have inside of you that I can see. I can see that you are yourself a potential murderer. But I want to thank you for holding back. Have you ever murdered anybody?
I have not murdered anyone. I have only fought people in the ring, mostly.
Whoa, what do you do in the ring?
I used to do Muay Thai before I had an accident.
Oh, that's awesome.
No shit.
I'm sorry about the accident.
What was the accident? No, is that sensitive or...
Oh, no, I took a kick very badly on one leg connected with a knee. And just when I put my weight back down, my knee was sliding in the direction where I wasn't supposed to go. And I just fell over. It was a year in crutches after that.
That's the problem.
Then you got to learn crutch fighting.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I have whacked a few people who were trying to push me around while I was on crutches with a crutch because the crutch is still very solid.
Yes, the woman that wrote Nothing But Blackened Teeth, Cassandra Cao, I don't think that we really want to be messing with her.
I don't want to mess with her because she's a potential werewolf. She's trained in Muay Thai.
Yep.
She knows the computer and we don't.
Absolutely.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future with the computer.
The salt grows heavy. I suppose the final question, what do you want people to gather or learn from this book? Is there anything that you, any... moral message that you would like to for people to take away, or just have fun with it?
Just have fun with it and also dig into the old Grimm's fairy tales. There are a lot of stuff that's not covered by Disney and has like fallen out of public knowledge.
I agree.
Like one of the things that I pulled into the book was a folklore called Some Children Play at Slaughter. It's just a bunch of kids doing a Lord of Flies thing and just stabbing each other.
Cool.
That was Grimm's fairy tales?
Yeah, the old stuff is, pardon the pun, grim as all hell.
Yeah, that is awesome.
I love a good pun. Thank you for that. My mom bought me the unedited ones when we were growing up because she thought they were the Disney ones. And I did read the story of Cinderella, and they got to the point where they cut the stepsister's toes off, and mom was like, Benjamin, that is not the story. And then she's like, I don't know what happened to that book. But my mom was like, that is not the story, Benjamin. But it is the true story. And I love that. Keep it true, keep it gory, because that's what life is.
And I'm so excited to read this book now. Like, this is very cool. I can't wait for this. And I'm gonna add a mermaid to my next D&D campaign.
Oh man, that's awesome.
Wow, that is awesome. Wow, that's cool. Wow, Henry, that's really cool.
Whatever, you like it, right? You like D&D? Do you play D&D?
I do. I've actually written for them as well.
No way.
What did you do for them? Huh? How did you do this? Oh, this is just in this one lifetime. So what did you do for D&D?
I worked with them on Call of the Netherdeep, the Critical Role book, Fistbend, Treasury Dragons, and Ben Richten's new thing, Ravenloft thing. I can never remember the whole
thing. That's so cool.
So fucking
that's
cool.
Awesome.
I don't really do much else but work out and go sleep and pet very large cats.
Oh, that's all you need to do.
You're doing good work, you know, and like that's kind of like, and what a cool dream. I mean, a lot of people look up to you. And so just let them know if anybody's coming up to try to take your place, you're going to do whatever it is to box them out. All right. Well, and I think it's important.
I don't
to know.
Think that really is going to happen.
She's holding people down because she knows she's got a dream job, but I think that's really good.
What?
Of you.
I think that you just sprung this entire personality trope upon this beautiful woman who had none of that to say.
I'm kidding. I know you're not. I know you're an innocent woman.
May 2nd. That is when the book drops. May 2nd.
This is so cool. Thank you so much for talking with us. Thank you so much for I can't believe that. That's so awesome.
The Salt Grows Heavy by Cassandra Kahl. Thank you so much for being here, Kahl. And and let us know whenever you're working on anything else. I know it says you do tabletop games,
so
video
cool.
games, and that's just really awesome. Also, Hammers on Bone. There's a bunch of stuff. You're really busy.
I generally very much am.
So that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much again for having me.
This is wonderful.
It was wonderful. This is the most fun I've had in a while.
Live from your grave.
All right, everyone, there it was, our conversation with Cassandra Kahl.
She's too smart.
Too smart.
I think she's too smart, too
there
creative,
you go.
Too successful.
You really nailed it. Well, check out her book. It comes out May 2nd.
That's a cool-ass career.
It is cool. I also really wanted to get into this history that she was talking about with the folklore in Malaysia.
Oh, yes. I think that's fascinating. There's a whole world
of
entities.
Two new cryptids, I think, too.
Oh, there's many. I feel like that's she doesn't know. The world of content she's opened up. And then we're going to have to thank her.
Yeah.
Probably bring her on.
What's it called? The toil? The fetus?
The toil. We're going to probably have to give her 10%.
Yeah, that's of what?
I
of
don't
her
know.
Toil money?
I think technically 10% of your rock star. Each one. You always got to put it in a little cup and we'll send it to her in a FedEx jar.
Well, what a lucky lady. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks
thank
for
you.
Giving to our Patreon. And thanks for the great response now that our stream is back. Y'all have been wonderful. Okay, everyone, hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations, all.
Thanks for your fucking money.
Truly, thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you for it.